Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
Brian Lehrer and WNYC, we heard about today's fireworks in Trenton. Now back across the Hudson for an update on the end-of-session drama in Albany over gay marriage, rent laws, and a property tax cap. There are other bills that could sneak through, too, in the fog of deadline week, including a proposal designed to destroy the Electoral College or at least help that destruction process along. We'll talk about all of this now with the sponsor of that bill, Bronx Assemblyman Jeffrey Dinowitz. Assemblyman, welcome back to WNYC.
Good to be with you.
And we'll get to the big outstanding issues, too, gay marriage, rent, property tax. But let me ask you first about your Electoral College bill. As most of our listeners currently know, we elect a president through each state getting a certain number of electoral votes allocated mostly by population. So New York has a lot of say in who gets elected president, California, Texas, Florida, and other big states. What do you want to change?
Well, first of all, actually, New York has very little say. The Electoral College is really an 18th century anachronism. Right now, what happens is that only a few states really count in the current process. I mean, as we've seen in the last several elections, presidential candidates spend almost all of their time in a very small number of swing states, such as Florida, Ohio, and Pennsylvania. And the reason is that most states are automatic wins on one side or another. So, for example, New York, California, pretty much always go Democratic nowadays. Mm-hmm. Texas, Republican.
Right.
This is true with some of the larger states. It's true with some of the smaller states. Rhode Island, Democratic. Wyoming, Utah, Republican. So candidates don't spend their time there. They don't spend their money in those states. They don't talk about the issues that are specific to those states. And so most people in the United States are essentially spectators in the presidential election process. They may think they're participating, but if you vote in New York, your vote doesn't really mean anything. Whether I vote or you vote is not going to influence the outcome in New York in any real way because it's overwhelmingly Democratic. And so as a result, we don't see the candidates. I remember a time when candidates would come to the Bronx. Walter Mondale came to the Bronx. Michael Dukakis came to the Bronx. This doesn't happen anymore because they got to go where their time and energy is going to make a difference.
So if we assume that New York will remain overwhelmingly Democratic in presidential elections, why would the candidates come here even without an Electoral College?
Because, well, there would still be an Electoral College, but the process that we're trying to get passed would essentially create a national popular vote. The reason they would come here is because the winner of the presidential election under this process would be the winner of the national popular vote. So the more votes you get, no matter where they're from, is what's going to get you elected. So if you're a Democratic candidate, you're going to want to, or even a Republican candidate, it doesn't matter, you're going to want to spend more time in states like New York and Texas because a Democrat can go to Texas and get more votes out of Houston, for example, than they would have otherwise.
Right.
So they have an incentive to go there.
It's really interesting. So it becomes about turnout in a state like New York. So even though the Democrat presumably will get the majority, if that person can really energize the base and get a huge number of Democrats to turn out in New York, that would contribute more to the national popular vote. And so, therefore, does it transform politics to be less aimed at the swing voters, like in divided states like Ohio and Pennsylvania, and more at the base to get them energized to turn out? And does it, therefore, further polarize politics?
Not at all. I think candidates will not necessarily only go for the base. They will go for more states. They'll go to all the states. I mean, even within the limited number of swing states that we have, candidates don't necessarily not try to bring out their base. Of course they're going to try to bring out their base. Candidates have to do that. But right now we have a system. I think we're the only democracy where the winner doesn't necessarily win. Now, most of the time the winner does win, but, you know, I think we learned at an early age when we have an election for fourth grade class president, the person with the most votes wins, not the person with the second most votes. But in the United States presidential election process, the person with the second most votes can win, and sometimes does win. In 2000, the second place winner won, and in fact, in 2004 was almost on the flip side. If John Kerry had gotten about 50,000 more votes in one state, the state of Ohio, that would have given him a majority of the Electoral College, and he would have become president.
Even though Bush
won by had more than 3 million more votes than him. What kind of message does that send out? Are we really a true democracy? It's the only office in the country that's like that. Representative in Congress, senator, local office, state assemblyman, state senator, mayor, you name it. Everything else, the first place person wins,
so,
except for the most powerful position on the planet,
just
president.
Briefly, because I want to get to the state issues while we still have a couple of minutes, but if we change the system just in Albany through an act of the New York State Legislature, that doesn't affect the other 49 states. So what would your bill actually accomplish?
Well, it doesn't affect New York either at this time. This is the process. The national popular vote, the legislation is being put forth in each and every state, and it would create a compact among states. There are hundreds of compacts like that. For example, the New York, New Jersey Port Authority that runs our airports and the GW Bridge, that's an interstate compact. This would be an interstate compact among many states. It would only come into effect when enough states, such that they comprise a majority of the Electoral College, 270 or more votes, pass it. Once it's passed, those states will have pledged that in a presidential election that that their electors will vote for the winner of the national popular vote. So if the Republican wins the national popular vote, New York's Republican electors would then vote in the Electoral College. If a Democrat wins the national popular vote, the Democratic electors would vote, and they would vote for the winner of the national popular vote. So in essence, we would, without abolishing the Electoral College, because that would take a constitutional amendment, we would do what the law allows right now, which allows the electors to vote a particular way. In this case, the winner of the national popular vote.
Right, promising.
Guaranteeing that the winner is the winner.
That would be a tough day for some of those electors. If New York went for one candidate, but the other candidate won the national popular vote, for New York's electors to actually vote with that winner of the national popular vote. But that's what you're arguing, if we get to a point where enough of the country has signed on to that system.
Well, the electors who would actually do the voting would be the electors pledged to the national popular vote winner. So Democratic electors wouldn't have to vote for a Republican or vice versa.
All right, Jeffrey Dinowitz, Assemblyman from the Bronx. Let's go on to the current moment in Albany. Do we currently have a rent control, rent stabilization law in effect in New York State?
Well, not exactly. The laws expired at midnight last night. The governor's office and the state housing agency put out a memo essentially saying, don't worry, laws will be enforced, everything is in effect. I mean, most people's leases, for example, do not expire on June 15th. So tenants should not go into a panic right now that all of a sudden their landlords can evict them or that they'll be harassed or things like that. A few years ago, when we had to renew the laws, it also was not renewed on time. It was renewed a few days late.
And so the governor says he will force a special session if the legislature does not extend and strengthen the rent laws by the end of the regular session on Monday. We have more landlord power in the Republican-controlled state Senate, more tenant power in the Democratic-controlled assembly that you're in. But will this all be retroactive? What about those few people out there who perhaps do have leases that expire today?
Well, last time when we had the situation, it was retroactive, and I'm certain that it would be retroactive again. I can just say, from my perspective, we not only have to renew the current laws, we have to strengthen them, because the current laws are tilted heavily in favor of the landlords, and it's not a level playing field. And continued as is, eventually there'll be no rent-stabilized apartments at all in New York City. So we must reform and strengthen those laws, and I don't think we should leave Albany until that is done.
Is a deal in the works for rent stabilization for the city and strengthening that to abolish vacancy decontrol in exchange for a property tax cap for the suburbs?
Well, there's certainly talk of linking the two issues, and I have absolutely no problem with that. I'm not a supporter of the property tax cap, which I assume most people know only affects areas outside the city, but I think it's bad policy. However, I think it's more important to get and strengthen the rent laws than it is to stop the property tax cap proposal. So many people do think they should be linked. And in fact, you know, logically, both relate to the continuing ability of people to be able to afford to live in their homes. So they're very similar issues.
And what about gay marriage? Let me play you a clip of the Republican Senate leader, Dean Scalise, after yesterday's four-hour session at which they did not come to an agreement among the Senate Republicans. Here's Scalise.
We've had a tremendous conference, a thoughtful conference, discussing the issue of marriage equality.
And they're back at it today, I understand. Are they getting anywhere? Are you hearing anything?
Well, I don't have any inside info. Right now, there are 31 votes for marriage equality in the Senate. We need 32 votes. There are 62 members of the Senate. 32 is a majority. I believe that there are still a couple of more Republicans who are prepared to vote yes. The question is whether they'll bring the bill to the floor. I would hope that on this issue of human rights, of equality, that the Republican leadership would allow their members to vote up or down on this issue. This is a very important issue. This affects the rights of millions. I'm not thousands, millions. Certainly, I'm sure at least a million people in New York and their equal rights. And not to be able to vote on it is to me is outrageous. We had a long four and a half hour debate in the Assembly yesterday. The bill was passed again. It was passed for the fourth time, and there is widespread support across the state. I would hope that that the leadership of the Republicans in the Senate would have the guts to bring this bill to the floor and let people vote their conscience. You know, we can disagree on this issue. I mean, we had a very respectful debate, I thought, in the Assembly last night on the issue. Let people vote how they feel, but let them vote.
So where is this headed? Is this going to be part of what they call the big ugly, which is that at the end of the legislative session in Albany, all of these outstanding pieces of legislation kind of get mushed together, and there's a lot of horse trading that goes on, you know, across topics. And so gay marriage maybe will be agreed to if somebody gives something on property taxes or some other special interest or something or other that I can't even figure out what it's going to be.
I suppose that's possible, but I got to tell you, when it comes to issues of basic human rights, I don't think that's something that there ought to be horse trading about. Either you're going to vote for it or you're going to vote against it. If you're against marriage equality, I mean, I understand the arguments that people make, and I certainly have respect for them. But to trade your vote on that for some other issue, it's a moral issue in many ways, and I don't think that's an issue where people should be, you know, changing their minds in that fashion. I would hope that there are enough good Republicans in the Senate who want to vote for this because they understand, just like a few of our Republican colleagues in the Assembly understood, that this is not about about these other issues. This is about people's rights. This is about equality. This is about family values. We're talking about families here. And deep down, I believe that ultimately the Senate will do the right thing, and I just hope it happens sooner rather than later.
Assemblyman Jeffrey Dinowitz, Democrat from the Bronx. We keep saying any day. I'll just keep saying it. Any day, something's going to happen. You want to start your summer vacation. All the legislators do. So any day, something has to happen.
It's not a vacation. We spend our time, at least I do. I spend my time in my district, as do most of our colleagues, and we work very hard when we're not in Albany. It's just not a vacation.
Thanks for coming on.
Have a good day.
Brian Lehrer, WNYC. Coming up next, we continue our ethnic neighborhood series called The New Littles. Today, Little Guyana in Queens and the new Little Italy. Stay tuned. By the way, our politics website, itsafreecountry.org, is now the place for smart coverage of the 2012 presidential race and more. Right now on the site, see an Elsa Chang reporter's notebook on staking out Albany for gay marriage morsels at itsafreecountry.org.